Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny. Oh wait, here's Johnny. All right, that's my Jack Nicholson. Happy Halloween to us because we're recording this the day before Halloween.
Oh, it's good. I thought that was your Johnny Carson.
Yeah. No. Because man, I can't even. I'm not even going to try to impersonate him. I don't know. It's like, yeah, I can do a Johnny Carson. Well, we have a. Damn it. Now I'm getting confused with. Oh, we have a really great show. Who's that guy?
Ed Sullivan. I think you talked about, right?
Yeah, it's Ed Sullivan.
Oh, my God. We're so old. Nobody knows what we're talking about. I know.
Yeah, one of my, just a fair warning, one of my 5-word plot reviews is probably going to go over like everyone's head, but hopefully you'll get it.
Well, I mean, that's why we do this show for us. And welcome to the show. This week, we will review Under the Shadow. As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we'll go to deep spoiler analysis. But first, hey, John.
Hey, Rolando.
Let's go over here. Let's go over here to Short Film Corner. A new segment I just named where we will
hold on,
do...
I'm not over there?
No.
I'm not going to go over there.
No, go over here.
All right. Hold on.
Sit.
You go first. That's scary. No. You don't even turn the light on. It's spooky season. I don't know.
We'll go...
All right, fine. I'll
we'll go together. We'll go together. Let's go together.
All right. Thank you for holding my hand.
Yeah. That's not my hand.
Sorry, I'm sweaty.
Yeah.
Oh, sausage. Anyway, we're cooking sausages today, ladies.
So I decided that we should review. Usually we put like a mini review here. And lately we've been doing short horror films. And
You know what? This explains this little corner because I'm like, there is a TV on a TV stand and it's all white noise static going on. That's why I don't want to go over there. There's like 2 seats. They're folding chairs.
Yeah.
I don't know. No light. Thank you. I guess we'll work on that.
Just follow the light.
Put some light in here.
Yeah. What?
Some billowy sheets. Some billowy shears and curtains.
It's a nice corner. It's a
because
corner.
Right now you just have the windows taped up and I was confused as to why you have them taped up with newspaper.
I like to read the news in the morning. So I don't know what we're doing anywhere. So the short film corner, I decided to name this segment to where we will look at a short film before our main feature film. This week we're going to go back to our past and we're going to look at our second submission in what was it called? Film competition.
36-hour film festival.
Yes, the 36-hour.
Real quick, we had intended to review a short called The Relic by a company called Alter, but I'll go ahead and say it. It sucked. That's the review. Moving on.
So
to something we can talk about.
So we had a lot of fun talking about, well, I don't know if we had fun, but we had a lot of fun talking about Speechless last week. So we decided to look at our...
Speechless,
excuse me.
Sorry, I need to correct you. Yes.
Correct me. Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. And we decided to look at our second submission, and we only submitted 2. And this is our second, and it's called Game Show. So Game Show, how do we even begin to talk about Game Show? Game Show is our, well, I described it last week as like my answer to what I thought they wanted, as opposed to making something for ourselves. I decided to make it for the judges, the audience.
Our Armut signed Urinal by Duchamp, if you will. Yeah, we're cultured.
Look
at
us.
That was a fuck you piece also.
Yeah. So basically we decided to make our most maybe thrown together project that was done really quick, and there was a lot of chaos and drama behind the scenes. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah.
That we won't divulge too much into. But
yeah, you got to watch the mini doc on the Patreon.
Yeah, they will so name names. I am. So we looked at it. We literally just watched it. Once we decided we weren't going to talk about Relic, we literally sat and we watched it again. And we had a good time laughing and talking about why well, I did. Good time talking about it. And I remember you actually have appear in this one. You play a contestant in a game show of where if you do not answer the riddle or question, you were brutally murdered off screen, which was...
Yes.
Kind of the concept of it, where we had four contestants basically play this very cruel game. And if I can remember, I think Paul was helping me write this with, was Paul, right? Paul, myself, and somebody else.
I want to say it was John Gonzalez for sure.
John Gonzalez, yeah.
I think Orlando Campa was, I mean, I keep fucking, I'm horrible about saying last names. It's just, it's our culture, man. we come from the deep South where you just say last names for some reason. To be fair, everybody, no matter who I meet at work, at some point they're gonna be like, oh, John Flores, how you doing? I'm like, oh, okay,
yeah,
I don't remember your last name, but sure. Hals.
I want to say the offset, I think Paul was there too. I remember throwing him some ideas and he was like, yeah, we should do that. Yeah. I don't remember John.
Paul yeah. was like, oh, more sex. Yeah,
just more.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I remember Paul and I had this concept that this was like a instead of it's a game show, but it's supposed to be like Running Man. It was supposed to be like this dystopian society. That was what we had pictured when we were thinking about it. It's this dystopian society where there was this game show and it was extremely cruel but extremely popular was the idea. So essentially Running Man, I think, would be the easiest, even though at the time we weren't thinking of that movie, but I think that's the easiest comparison at the time.
That makes sense.
Of course, all of that is like completely not in the movie. It's really just like four contestants answering questions and then just being murdered or not being murdered.
Like, and they're like, I don't know how else to, like, bathroom riddles. I don't know how else to describe them. Like,
yeah.
Something you kind of get in the back of like a... almost like a highlights magazine or like maybe a Reader's Digest, like those type of riddles.
Right. It was
which
honestly,
I really enjoyed. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just easy stuff that we thought would be fun to come. When we came up with the riddles, that was the idea. Just something like, you know, nonsensical. You know what I mean? Kind of like silly.
Yeah.
Silly. I think we
should be easy enough to answer, but these people are not thinking, so they die. And I really like that about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because I remember this film had a different ending. I mean, they cut all the fat, like the guys who directed it and everything, they cut a lot of the fat off of it. But I'll never forget this ending that Paul had. That Paul wanted him to think that he won, but instead he just gets into another line, a longer line, where there's like this idea where he's constantly being... like in this contest forever, which I thought like, oh dude, that's a fucking great idea. Even though we couldn't like technically pull that off, like in 36 hours, we didn't have like the time or the people, the budget, but I thought that was always a really fun idea to kind of end the short.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But that, what, it starts off with some guys DJing.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's just got his laptop. He's still doing something on the laptop. Holding one of his what do you call them, cans, you know? That's what we call them in the biz, his headphones. He's holding one of his cans. And what's really funny is you see like a bunch of like waving arms. it was a bunch of us on our knees, like crouching down, just putting our hands in frame.
Yeah, that was a cool idea. Like it kind of works, even though it was kind of silly. if anybody saw what we were doing, it looks stupid, really stupid and silly. I don't remember why we made him a DJ. Oh, that was, I think that was one of the
elements, right?
Elements for it was that he had to be a DJ.
You had to advertise the thing, right? You had to say, now we're back in business, or I think we're back in business was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
God, I don't remember the rest of them, but those were three of them at least.
I think there's fewer of them, maybe. Or I don't remember. Honestly, I don't recall. Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't that long ago. This was maybe like almost a decade ago. But
Yeah.
Because I know it says 9 years ago, but that's definitely not when we did it.
That's not when he uploaded it, yeah.
No, because I've been away from Texas for
a lot, yeah.
A longer than that.
That was kind of like the ideas of it, I guess, the conception of it. Bigger ideas than I think was the execution and the time we had or the budget. But you, of course, were one of the contestants.
Hey.
You just briefly talk about it? Or
I also helped with the makeup.
Oh, yeah, so help with the makeup. That's true, you did. You and Patty worked on the makeup, which she was always super good about that. She was always really good about all that effects stuff. She constantly was a go-to person for that, I remember.
She's like somebody I wish had moved out here with us, because I think she would gotten like really far in whatever she wanted to do in film, but I also am happy she's not involved in this. I'm happy for all my friends that decided to not do this. They get to have a real life.
Yeah.
No. Instead of people constantly telling me like, oh, come on, you gotta set aside time for your own thing. I'm like, when do I do this? Retirement. When I retire.
Yeah.
Oh no. Anyway. Let's see. What I was the second contestant, and it's kind of a good thing because it made me seem like a good actor if you watch the first contestant.
Oh.
Like my scream, even though I felt silly doing it, I was like, well, it played way better than the other one, I think. But, you know, there's that. And I think I won an award for that. That's what this is the only reason I'm bringing it up, because I was like, oh, I won an award for this? Okay.
John, they loved you. You won everything. You literally won everything.
I'll take this award. Where is it now? I'm not sure. I'm sorry. It's back in Texas for sure, somewhere, I think. Let's see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. I remember we did all that, and then by the time I had finished doing my scene, I was like, I'd really love to help, but I'm covered in this like sticky blood. I just don't want to be I don't want to be walking around in this for another 20 hours or something.
That was the one thing we were known for. We didn't really think things through.
Yeah.
we just kind of got you dirty and be like, all right, come help us now. Hang out.
I want to go home. I feel like shit. I was like, because we were using what? It's like corn syrup blood, I think. So everything was real sticky, and the more it dried, the worse it felt. It's like, I hate this. More power to everyone else that stuck it through. Good for them. Yeah, because again, we didn't think it through, and I don't think I brought like extra clothes. I was like, ah, fuck. I'm an idiot. let's see. And then Leia won an award for that too, I'm pretty sure. Then we won a couple of other things. Did we win a makeup award? I think Patty won an award, I want to say.
Okay. Yeah.
Did we win script? Oh, and did Rob Garcia, did he win an award?
He won. Rob won,
okay, that makes total sense. Because if anybody watches it, which we'll drop a link and somewhere at some point. he's fucking fantastic. Like, wow. He's always been such a, like, he studied acting, but he's always had such a great natural instinct for things.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. We really swept the awards. And again, this was our kind of like, all right, this is what you want. We're going to give you what you want. And we're like, oh, okay. We actually won.
That was, I don't know how everybody else felt, but that was my mentality. Like, I wanted to just be like, I wanted to just, what's the easy way to say this? Like, just like, here, take it. This is it. And then everybody else just like, you know, I don't know. How'd you feel about losing Speechless?
I mean, I was bummed. We all put in a lot of work. Like, I stayed till the bitter end to push that score out with the director, Paul. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Torres was like, oh, no less. Jonathan was like working on like the title cards and all that. This one, he was working on the effects, which look really cool. Which again, people were trying to argue, like, this looks like they did it beforehand. And it's like, oh my God, how? You have no idea how much better it would look if we had time.
Yeah.
Sorry, you guys suck. No, I'm just joking. Everybody did a great job. But
not everybody. We won everything.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? I take it back. Sorry, you guys suck.
You guys suck.
I play a lot of COD, which is Call of Duty. And you have to learn how to talk to people like that. Like, oh, you suck every time you win. I don't know. Yeah, I was bummed out we didn't win Speechless. And then I remember Paul asking, like, oh, you don't want to do the score with me again? And he got real sad. I was like, in my head, I was like, what's the point? I just want to go home and wash this shit off.
Yeah.
And we won.
And we won everything. It was great. It was.
Moral of the story, guys, is don't try. It doesn't matter. Just have fun with it.
Just have fun. Don't try. It's the only kind of redeeming thing about Speechless is that they still, part of their, when they do the like intro demo, like welcome to Seeing His Soul, and they put all the films of the past in it, they have Speechless in there. They have the scene where Perla like hits the wall and then she like slides with the blood on it.
Oh yeah, what was it? The Desperado moment, right?
Yeah, she makes it outside and then like she's bleeding and then they still use that in their freaking highlights or whatever.
Hell yeah. I mean, that was a cool shot.
That was a cool shot, yeah. Didn't see anything on Game Show, though. I don't know. This was a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of really good actors, like you said. Like, Rob's, like you said, Rob was always a go-to guy.
He was amazing. Leo was always fun to watch, right? Like, she always came through and, like, gave it her all.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we could get Albert to act, he was fucking great too.
Yeah. Yeah. Albert directed it.
Jonathan, but he like started focusing on effects, but he was such a great actor. I mean, we had like a group of really great actors.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Edwin Mendoza. I'm going to drop a last name here. Edwin Mendoza and I were in what was it? Like a video recreation of King Lear, like one scene. And I gotta say, he's always like, oh man, I hope nobody sees this. Oh, my acting's terrible. I'm like, man, I'm sharing the shit out of this. Everybody needs to see Edwin Mendoza act. And then every time they work with him, like, oh, he's an amazing DP. I'm like, have you seen his acting? I'll show you. You know what? But with that said, I don't think Game Show's bad at all. It is a lot of fun to watch.
Looking back on it, I like it. It's really simple, but I like that there's a lot of creativity in it. With the effects, are pretty cool for the time, we had, and for what the time was that what Jonathan did. Yeah. I thought was like, I was like blown away. I was like, oh my God, this looks futuristic. You know what I mean? So, Jonathan and Edwin, I think, worked on it. Because I remember Edwin talking about, he like, oh, dude, I'm doing all these plates at Real Bravo now and shit like that. He became real excited about it. It's like, I know how to do all this stuff. And I was like, it's real simple. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's cool. We should definitely use it then. You know, if it's possible.
Yeah, real simple. Okay, geniuses over here. I'm going to go be a stupid actor real quick. See you later. Yeah, that was such a fun time. And like I said, there was a lot of drama behind the scenes, but it was also, we had created this conglomerate. What was it? Company of Brothers was one of the things that was made up for it. It was like coalition of, I forgot what. I keep saying of, it's an A.
Collaboration among anyway, we're called.
Yeah.
CAB.
CAB.
CAB Films.
CAB Films. And we started doing all our student projects under that moniker too, right?
Yeah.
So we were working closely with each other a lot.
Yeah, it was cool.
And then by the time we did this.
Huh? Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say by the time we did this, not like, I don't know if we were really frustrated with each other. We just, South Texas is a small community where anything could happen. Not like LA where you work on one thing and it's like, yeah, the chances of seeing these people again.
Yeah.
But never say never. Learning that the hard way now.
Okay. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. That was super fun. Yeah. Cause it was so before we started like thinking about businesses or thinking about like we should do this, we should do that, we should do all these other things, and it just got too big, too many cooks, you know. Yeah. And it just kind of got muddled, but I mean we all had a incredible amount of passion and like dedication to the craft of learning the craft the right way, you know, and try to do it the way we best we could, the best we knew, right? I mean, you've definitely could answer this, and not you and so can I, that like set life is completely different on a more like bigger budget professional sets, but we did try really, really hard to be as professional as possible, even though we were like amateurs, right? At best.
Yeah. We just didn't know.
You know, yeah.
Like the program we all came from, it's like, well, they taught us the best they could. Even though the information they were giving us for film was like wildly outdated, I think we're still working on DV cams.
like
DV tapes and shit like that. And it's like, well, yeah, I don't know. I feel like we definitely had a lot more fun though. We were very creative, you know, i.e. what I said, our little kneeling on the ground and still hunching down and like throwing our hands in the air to pretend we're a big crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that seems like such a long, I mean, it is a long time ago now, I guess. But didn't it feel like your 20s flew by while we were doing that? And then here, time seems to have slowed down dramatically, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew to, after what, maybe like 10 years of going to school, working in the you know, film business, right? Yeah, here in LA.
It's nasty. Hollywood.
I didn't even like movies anymore.
Yeah. That happened like fairly quick too. It was like, you know.
I hated sets. I hated it becomes like anything, it's a lot of fun. It's really can be really fun and creative and rewarding, but it's also like any job a grind, and you have your like things you hate about it. And
like the bigger the project, the more I think what happens is you start to lose that spark for like, you know, really caring about the stuff. And then it's just a job like anything else. Everything just turns into a job.
Yeah.
Which is why definitely. People get frustrated with people like, oh, you want to work on this passion project? Like, not really. It's not my passion project.
Yeah. It's like, where is it? How much am I getting paid? What are the hours? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
and it's funny that I finally hit a point in my life and career where, for example, a friend reached out to me and is like, hey, because he's union too. He's like a union art director. He's like, hey, he has this like big opportunity because he's also a designer and he's a phenomenal designer. He's like hands down probably the best designer I've worked for. And he's a friend too. It's like, you know, I'm sure you're probably working on something big, but if you're free, I have this thing, and I already knew what the project was because our mutual friends have been talking to me about it. And I said, I can't do that first week because I'm helping out a friend my friend, she's leading this project and it pays really well, so I got to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to go in and help them for the last 2 days and just like kind of sneak in there, even if I don't get paid, just because it's like, at least I'll feel good about working on that. These other things are just jobs. You know, yeah. When we were doing this stuff back in the day, it felt like we were all working on this together.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Not one of us was like, I'm just here because whatever. Like, nobody was getting paid. So, yeah.
It's true. We all had a good mentality. Like, we all knew how to, like, play our roles. Like, if somebody told us, okay, you're doing sound, I was like, okay, I'm going to fucking do sound. I'm not going to have an opinion about the script or the directing. And, well, I don't know. That was my mentality. Like, if somebody told me to write it, I would write it, right? Or if somebody told me to fucking sound or grip or whatever, like, I would just go do that. I wouldn't, like, fuss about the other parts of the job. And I think a lot of us had that same attitude, I guess. Or maybe we were all happy, kind of knew that we were doing something special, you know, because we saw what was around and there really wasn't very much in terms of like film and TV, you know. There wasn't a lot of people working in the things that we were working in.
Yeah.
So when we saw what we were doing and we were all kind of really like good at it in some, you know, aspects of it, like we were just saw how special that was. So
yeah, exactly. Because there was no film community down there. Not really. Also beer.
Beer helped.
There is also beer.
Beer. Yeah. Oh.
Beer should have been winning all these awards, honestly.
Pizza and beer. That's all we could guarantee you guys.
Pizza, beer, probably tacos at some point, and a michelada at like 9 a.m. at a drive-through. Yeah.
And we're not going to explain that. You're just going to have to figure that one out. That's a Texas thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Did you want to add anything else? Or?
No. Other than I went back to Mohawk Bend again recently. Because we had just gone recently, not too long ago.
Yeah.
And
delicious.
Micheladas are now on the menu. And the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, dude, this is like the best michelada I've had in a long time in LA.
Oh yeah, dude, micheladas. That sounds so good. I can't drink anymore, but it sounds really good. But what did I drink that night? What did I drink when we went out? Was it a michelada? What
yeah,
did
you had a couple of micheladas.
I had a couple of micheladas. That's right. But I felt like they were virgin because I didn't.
So they did have an alcohol in it, but it was it wasn't weak or anything like that. It was just, I think, like a flavored sort of alcohol, like, I don't know, like a salt flavor, like a whatever flavor. So it blended in really well.
Yeah, they're delicious. They're good. Super good.
And that's our review of Game Show. The micheladas were delicious.
That's put that on my tombstone. The micheladas were delicious. All right.
That's going to be on our t-shirts. They're going to be on sale on our website.
Yeah.
Skeleton Boys and micheladas are delicious.
Yeah. 10 sexy spooky bones on the micheladas.
I'm going to get
it. Let's just go around LA and rate micheladas.
Yeah. That's our new podcast. We're running out of good horror films to review. So.
Uh-oh. Oh, boy. All right.
We're going to do Salem's Lot. Oh, Jerusalem's Lot, which came out, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, I was going to say, Jerusalem's Lot is in production. No, I think it's a very possible future. Maybe. I don't know.
We still haven't done the sequel.
I thought about... So everybody just like can skip ahead, but this is just you and I, John, talking.
Yeah, okay.
Now? So
yeah, skip ahead.
You talking about the sausage, but... listen to this. This is just... Behind the sausage type. But I thought...
Oh, hold on. Hey, no, seriously, stop listening.
Yeah, get out of here.
What are you doing? Earmuffs. Yeah. Okay, funny guy. No, close your fingers. You can't open them up in the middle and pretend that... No, come on. Okay. I think we're good now.
What if we do a re-record of Salem's Lot?
I've thought about that, too.
You thought about that, too.
I don't know if I can sit through it again, but I will try.
I don't know if we're going to sit through it again. Yeah. That's what I heard when I heard about Jerusalem's Lot. I was like, maybe we can re-record or rebroadcast. I don't know. Just something to think about in the future. We'll discuss it. We'll do a live commentary of Salem's Lot.
Yeah, we should. Oh, man. All right.
Okay.
Now we're back. Hey.
All right.
Hey. Hey. Uncover your ears. All right. I think we're good.
All right. We're good.
I think we're back in business. Oh, call back to the short we did for the film rates.
That's a deep cut. All right. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Yes, I do. For Under the Shadow, my Johnny's plot summary. I actually have 4 of them.
Oh.
Coming in at 4, longest anti-child campaign ad. That was the fucking kid's fault, yeah. Right? The entire movie was the kid's fault.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. It's that fucking kid.
Coming in at 3, Wendy Room creates trolling bedsheet.
It's true.
Well, that might be 6 words, actually. I made bedsheet one word of my thing. Coming in at 2, ghost moms, not ghost dad. That's my deep cut. I don't know if anybody's going to know that movie, and nobody's going to watch his films anymore. Or is a
ghost dad? Oh,
Bill Cosby.
Yeah. Yeah. Got canceled.
Yeah, he canceled. For good reason, too. And coming in at 1, bombing causes some crazy shit.
Oh, there it is. That's the winner. There. That's the one. There it is. I like listening to these. These are insights into how you feel about the movies, but these were pretty general. Usually, so.
I really just focused on the it being a sheet until you saw it, sort of.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the review. John, what are your first thoughts on Under the Shadow?
It was okay. I'm going to call it a real run-of-the-mill sort of horror film. I appreciated it trying to be real political, but nothing really horror-like happens until an hour in, I want to say, right? So a movie I could compare this to, let's say like politically driven-wise, is La Llorona. But La Llorona at least was like kind of spooky, doing some stuff the entire movie. And this one was like real, real, real political, like real, like, this is what's going on in war-torn Iraq, 1980, whatnot. Like so much so that I kept forgetting it was a horror movie I was watching. I was like, what am I watching right now? I'm like, oh, that's right. That's right. Like I forgot at some point there's supposed to be a djinn or something.
Yeah.
But you know, and then the djinn came out and it's like, I don't know, just, set it on fire or something. Spray starch at it. Right. I don't know. It's a bed sheet.
Get the wrinkles out.
It's a bed sheet. It's like, no, it's an old woman. I'm like, oh, that's even more reason to spray it with starch, I think. I don't know. How'd you feel?
I think I loved this movie. This is a Rolando movie. 100%. It is, to me, a beautiful story between a mother and a daughter. And the relationships you build and how sometimes those can always be kind of messy. And there could be a lot of like jealousy. There could be a lot of like friction between a mother and a daughter.
Right.
And I, especially in this story, like just the way it began with her. So this is set in 1980s.
Oh, man. Yes.
War-torn Tehran, right? Between Iran and Iraq. They were in a battle with each other. And I found this really fun parallel. Well, not fun. It's actually a really relevant parallel between they're battling each other because at some point Iran was, getting bombed by Iraq just with missiles. They weren't even sending warnings anymore. They were just throwing missiles at big urban, parts of the cities and stuff. And so there's always this constant fear of going outside. And this is post-revolution Iran, so there's a really strict religious, government. So a lot of the, I'm assuming that, and this, our lead, the mother, she was a part of the revolution, right? And they lost. So now she has to kind of follow the stricter kind of Muslim rules.
Right.
Right.
And, which is why she couldn't get back into the college she was studying to get her medical degree.
Right.
And which that scene was like, man, what a fucking prick. He's like, oh, I just wanted to call you in here to make sure I could tell you to your face. You suck. You can't come in.
Never.
You can't come back.
I thought her performance in that scene was so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And you just literally see in her face just her dreams being crushed.
Oh.
Literally. And I felt this incredible empathy for her.
I needed to explain something. I thought the acting was phenomenal in this. She did. Oh, man, she was so fucking great. My disconnect to this film 100% stems from whatever, like, anime sort of voice actors they got to fucking voice them all. I should have just watched the subtitles because it, like, really took me out of it. It really felt like I was watching, like,
okay.
Like these really great performances, and then, like, anime actors were fucking, like, American or English anime actors were voicing all these people. And I was like, oh, this is really killing me right now.
Okay, so you watched the dubbed version. You didn't watch
the subtitle, the caption version, no. Which probably ruined the experience for me.
I watched the subtitle version. I didn't know that was a choice.
I didn't really think
was already
about
preset.
Doing a subtitle because it just gave me the dubbed version. So I was like, oh, okay. And then it was
Yeah, that's always... So we saw two different movies almost,
like
right?
Really, almost, yeah, I think so. Because the little girl probably came across as like more annoying... And like a really, really bad actress, according to the version I saw, because the dub was so like disconnected and like over the top almost. I'm like, ah, okay. Yeah, I don't know. So I think I goofed on my end.
Yeah. No, yeah. Dubs are always tough. It's always just whatever, you know, performances it is. It's like, how do you interpret somebody else's like, performance, you know, nuanced performance.
Right. Yeah.
Some of that gets lost, of course. The parallel I saw with our current situation and their situation was that I've always like heard about like, you know, these countries are always at war with each other and bombing each other. And of course, being from America, I wouldn't have been able to experience that.
Right.
So, but the parallel I found was that now that we're living in this like COVID time, these people are trying to live their normal life, but they can't even go outside, right? Because they don't know if they're going to get bombed. They don't know if they have like this constant fear of being outside, especially this mother who's a little more progressive. And for two reasons, right? There's a bombing of her country. There's the sort of stricter, you know, conservative government in place. So her only real refuge is her home, right? And which is what a lot of us have been doing during COVID, right? Living at home. That's our quote unquote refuge. So for once I was able to put myself in these people's shoes, you know, these people that are coming from these countries that are always having conflicts with other countries was that here today, we still try to live a normal life, right? But of course we have restrictions, right? We have to have our vax card. We have to have a mask. You know, there's all these things in place, even though we try to live a normal life. We try to go to the movies,
the
but we don't
normal,
know,
yeah.
you know,
and we're in constant
fear. Yeah, we try
fear.
To go on. And I kind of made that parallel between their situation and our current situation, how they try to still live a normal life, right? Like, even though they know these other things are happening, they try to just go about their life, visit family members, you know, go to places and stuff like that. So I thought that there was a really beautiful drama in the beginning between... the mother, the daughter, this family that is her only real refuge is her home, but it gets invaded by this sort of supernatural creature that gets them out of their home, and there's really nowhere for them to run. And early in the movie, they're both were doctors, right? Or she was trying to become a doctor, and I think he becomes a doctor, her husband, and he has to leave because of the fighting. He has to go to like battles and help the soldiers, right? And she has to stay at the apartment, and she has to basically, And I think they did a really interesting, I think she is an incredibly flawed character, which are always the most relatable, you know? She's not like a perfect mother. She's not a perfect...
She's a person. Yeah, it's like, yeah. They really dive into like, she is just a person that is trying her fucking hardest right now. And it seems like everything just keeps going against her. And, you know, she's got her little like things that she needs to do to keep her sanity, like her aerobics tape, her Jane Fonda aerobics tape. And when this thing invades the home, it tries to take away all these things from her and her daughter, like the one thing that kept her daughter sane. Yeah. I mean, that stuff was really, really cool. I really thought that was neat.
Yeah.
It's fucking bedsheet.
And it's that's what. No, yeah. The drama that's unfolding is like this mother who is trying to balance her own personal aspirations and her newfound motherhood, right? She's trying to like have kind of both, which is I think what a lot of people struggle with. And without really seeing it, you get a sense that there's almost a resentment, right? That she got pregnant. She had to stop going to the university. She stopped to raise the kid, right? And she had to put her dream on hold, even though it's unsaid. And she tries to be as good of a mother as she possibly can. And they do a really good way of showing instead of telling you by her being maybe a little short with the daughter, being a little frustrated, not believing her when she's talking about like these monsters, she can't go to sleep, she's peeing in the bed, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. All these little occurrences that are happening. She's so like, I kind of felt like she wasn't always loving with the daughter, but she was always kind of a little bit like strict with her or a little standoffish.
I think compare this to a lot of movies, but they're like a lot of movies share the same exact theme, right? Let's say, for example, like The Babadook.
Mm-hmm.
Like same exact relationship. Mm-hmm. And then there's several American films. I think it's a very fascinating thing that for the most part, because a woman gives birth to this child, automatically it's their responsibility. And a man is never like, you're never portrayed as that person in a film. It's always like a woman who's stuck in these situations. And I feel like that's an interesting theme that goes across several cultures.
Yeah. And I thought they did a really like, they did really fun stuff with the direction. Like they did really simple frame, subtle blocking. Like one scene that I remember that when the husband and are still there and they kind of were fighting a little bit, they kind of stopped talking. But in the next preceding scenes, they are laying in bed where they're laying opposite each other. That's kind of like a real kind of like film school thing. They're not like facing each other. Or they're not hugging or embracing. They're just like, she's facing to the left and he's facing to the right, completely opposite each other, showing the distance
between them. They're farting at each other.
Which is like total like, yeah, it's like, that's like film school shit. They're shooting toots at each other. I think, yeah, they're all butts with each other. But no, I think stuff like that really like, it's really subtle. And that's what I think the movie does almost to a fault. Because like, there are a couple of things that I think, we'll get to the ending because I think the ending is too subtle. On the what exactly happened, the last beats of the movie are too subtle. But I think that there's this, and the story really takes its time before we get into like the spooky stuff, like the actual
like I said, like a long
stuff.
Time.
But it's a slow build. It's a really slow build, and at some point I was thinking like, is this like was I did I did I pick the wrong movie? Because it seemed like. I had to like stop it and like look it up on IMDb. Now, yeah, it says horror. It says horror here. Okay, well, I'll just continue with the movie, you know? But it definitely leans into, they do a really great job of showing the drama and the sort of the psychological deterioration of the character, right? Because she starts having like dreams and all these like episodes throughout, and it gets more subtle and more intense. And I think they did some like really cool stuff with the sound. There was always like a like we call them jump scares, but I think that's selling it short. There was always big crashing things going on when under the silence of the movie. I don't know if you got that sense.
Yeah. No, yeah, I got that too. Especially Because there was always like bombs going off in the background too, so you weren't sure what was going on. And mm-hmm. I think that was the idea. Like she would always assume like, oh, there's another bomb going off, but no, there's this like. At one point, I thought it was an old man, but I guess it's supposed to be an old lady crawling out of the ceiling, and then like being mm-hmm. slurped back up, and then like the ceiling like closes again. I don't know. It's just got, like being slurped like through a structure.
yeah.
Because I thought that was cool. I was like, oh no, they like another bomb, and like no, there's something else going on now.
Yeah.
Because these djinns come with the wind. Is that how they explain it?
Yeah, they travel through wind, and they look for people who are desperate or in conflict, which is probably what this would have been, the perfect situation, right? To haunt these people, right? Because they're going through all of this conflict with being bombed, with the oppressiveness of the government, and for like them living. How they are and stuff like that. Like, so the djinn would have been attracted to this, something like this going on.
Right.
I'm not familiar with djinns. I don't know. Are you? I wasn't sure what this was.
No, I'm not too familiar, other than I think it's spelled D-J-I-N-N, right? Sometimes it's spelled J-I-N-N. I think the djinn itself is a lot of different cultures, but I'm not entirely sure.
The djinn enters the apartment, and the way they kind of explain it is it tries to take something before it tries to take something the person they're trying to haunt, something they love,
oh,
right?
Man,
so there's like this whole thing about the daughter.
You want to hear something interesting? So huh? Djinn.
Yeah.
Also called a genie.
Oh.
Interesting. Huh? Arabic did mythology. Not know
that. That is interesting.
So when you watch Aladdin, bear in mind that Robin Williams came with the wind and got stuck in Aladdin.
Robin Williams haunting people. That's great.
But I'm sorry, continue. Fuck. Yeah, I just thought that was fascinating. Like, oh, djinn, genie, that makes sense.
Yeah, that actually does.
And then
that makes
everybody
sense.
In the comments is going to be like, how do these idiots not fucking know that? It's fucking stupid.
Fucking morons.
This is mind-numbingly stupid. That's what they're going to say.
Anybody could have a podcast. Or like our one fan, right?
Mind-numbingly stupid. one fan. I just want you to know I appreciate you. If you're listening to this one too, saying how stupid it is, I like you.
We
I
know.
I like you for saying that. We know. I love you, and I hope we meet.
But this is a very like moving story. I just was like completely into this movie, like 100%. Like I was like enthralled with it, and I would say the end. I can sense that it could be. I thought the ending was, I think, probably the hardest thing to land in this movie. But I actually liked it. I thought it was. It was good. I thought it was
so. Really I well. Would. I called it a run of the mill horror movie, or like a middle of the road horror movie, only because it didn't feel like. It felt like the horror aspect of this was tacked on. This felt like a different movie before they added that. Like I don't know.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that, but I think that. I think that's something that's I've come to realize with this show that we're doing. It's like horror is not as easily definable, you know, that there's always going to be like staples, right? There's always going to be we just reviewed all the Halloween movies, right? The first 8 Halloween movies. That's like horror. When people think horror, that's one franchise they think about. But coming to find the movies that we reviewed, horror can be defined a lot of different ways, right? I mean, it's not cut and dry, as always, right?
No, like, it's hard. That line between science fiction and horror is, like, really difficult also.
Or thriller. Or, yeah. And I think this movie... I completely agree with you, by the way, that I think this movie takes its time, and the spookies come at a time when it's, like... Suddenly we're in a horror movie
and
now,
we are
right?
talking like, about the 1980s film, The Spookies. Because we need to bring it back.
We need to bring it back. I still want to do that documentary and find all those people. I have to find out. But yeah, no, I think that like this movie is it doesn't easily fall into those categories. And to be completely honest, I don't think it's interested in the horror stuff as much. I think it really pins itself on this relationship between the mother and daughter. Like, and I think that it does a really good job of it, a really excellent job of it.
I mean, we can get into spoilers, because spoilers is what, like the last 20 minutes? So,
like, wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers.
Because, so like the djinn pops up, I don't know, everybody has left the building she's living in by this point. It's just right. her daughter, and the djinn. And the daughter has formed a relationship with the djinn, which I'm assuming now is just taking the form of a mother-like figure to engage with her. That way she's like sucked into this idea of her being a friend or, you know, a new mom, because the daughter's probably frustrated with her mom too. Which is like a lot of the djinn's fault, like stealing her one doll, and then cutting up it into pieces or whatever. And also making the mom feel like she's crazy. Like maybe she did do that and she just doesn't remember. But yeah, how do you interpret the ending? So at some point a missile does fall into the building they're in. And I was really, really hoping, and I'm glad it didn't play out this way, that it wasn't like, oh, they were dead the whole time. That, like, actually killed them, and it didn't. It's great. But this missile falls in, doesn't explode, very devil's backbone. So that family leaves, especially because the older guy that was living there, the grandfather, I forgot what the point of that character was, but he dies, and I think there's only women left, right, in that household, are all convinced that it wasn't like shock, like our hero thought it was. It was like definitely some sort of like force or something. So they leave because they're convinced, like, no, there's something here. There's a djinn. You got to get out. And then that leaves a hole in the ceiling, which is important. Why? I'm trying to figure that one out. Other than, I think the point of the missile cracks her ceiling and her room, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which right. is, I guess, the way the djinn gets in the first place.
Yes, I think so. I think it was like it let itself in that way because it found a way into the building. And I think the man that jumps into the ceiling is the older man that died, right?
That makes sense.
I just thought about that.
That does make sense.
When I saw that scene, I was like, what the fuck is going on? But yeah, I think it's the man that died upstairs. It's alluding to the fact that the djinn is trying to get in, right? That the crack is that I think it's a bit of symbolism of her sanity.
But her best bet in her head is if I just like casually tape it up with masking tape. Which that whole sequence was very fucking cool. Like it was shot. It was all like almost one shot. It made it feel like it was one shot. And just like kind of following mm-hmm. her level of her point of view with her still in frame. Right. I thought that was really neat because you always felt like something scary was about to happen. But then like there was a war going on. So that would happen also. I don't know. It was very interesting. Or like her nightmares happening where she tried to put she taped off an X on the windows, and that's because, well, if the windows shatter, at least most of it will stay together instead of blowing out towards her or towards her child. I don't know. Yeah, a lot of these parts, when it got spooky, it was like real spooky.
Yeah, I think so one thing they mention is the djinn needs to take something the person loves. In this case, it was the doll, and for the mother, it was the book, the medical book that her mother gave her. That workout tapes. So the doll goes missing, and so therefore now the djinn can actually now get into the home and like actually infiltrate them and like, you know, haunt them, I guess, right?
Oh, which, because I feel like some of those scenes happen before the missile hit, right? Like the, where they open the door and she sees something in a room. She's like, oh, she freaks out and the thing like runs out of the apartment. So that was probably the djinn taking shit.
Well, the dog goes missing early. So the daughter's like haunted, right? She gets like a fever. She's not feeling well. She's behaving
very exorcist.
But it was until, kind of exorcist-ish. But the mother, when she had her little keepsake locked up, right? It wasn't until she forgot to relock it that the book went loose. And for now, the djinn can haunt both of them. And it's sort of a slow sort of deterioration of the djinn sort of haunting them. So all these people, you know, are leaving and they're isolated. They're by themselves. And so now the djinn can now roam free and sort of, that's why they're able to see it. And it's represented in a, like you had mentioned, a bed sheet until it is revealed to be teeth only, right? Yeah. At some point, it's just like.
That was another less is more for me, I think, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't have cared to see it. I thought the djinn as a bed sheet more or less worked.
Yeah, yeah.
For what they were trying to accomplish. But I thought the details of the things that the djinn is trying to possess is important for the end, the very, very end, because they end up getting attacked and there's missiles coming at them. They try to go to the basement and they get kind of like torn apart from each other. And so the mother and daughter finally have it out about like their relationship, about the trust that they don't have. But the mother and the djinn attacks them and tries to take the daughter. But the mother saves her, right? And they get in their car and drive off. But what I thought was like the heartbreaking scene was that the things that they left, the things that they loved there. So I assumed that the djinn could come back and haunt them or find them, right? Because they left a piece of the doll and they left the book, the medical book that the mother had.
Discussing all this, I have a little bit of a different interpretation of it now. I feel like they were stuck there. They felt like they were stuck there because they didn't want to leave the things they loved. They want to leave the things they thought were what their life was supposed to be, what was important to them. And the only way for them to move on was to let go of those things.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right about it. I like that, because that was actually one thing I was going to ask you is why do you think the mother didn't want to leave? Like, she was very adamant about not leaving.
I think,
right? She wanted to hang, and I think you're absolutely right, that she wanted to hang on to this life, right? She wanted to hang on to what she had already. She couldn't let go. Like, she couldn't let go of her dream of being a doctor,
mom
right?
Wanted it,
she was crushed.
You know, she couldn't let go of that, like, but she can't, you know, stay behind just because her mom wanted that for her. Or, you know, and I think that sort of defines the relationship between the mom and the daughter, too, a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's a good point. I saw it as one last little dark thing where, because when the daughter gets the doll back and it's all cut up and the mother tapes it, she gets better, right? She gets, right. She's fine again. So she has the doll. And she's no longer sick and they escape. And so I thought the reason why they showed those last two things that they cared the most about, the head of the doll and the book, was because the djinn can still get to them, even though they escaped.
It occurs to me that maybe there was a shot of the hole in the ceiling one more time, the hole in the roof, as sort of a gesture of the djinn leaving. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wind and
like the djinn
whatever kind of like.
But I think, the head, because the little girl was still fine holding onto the doll, but didn't need the head of the doll anymore. I think I'm assuming now the daughter finally has her mother and the mother finally understands what's supposed to be important.
Right.
Damn. I really wish I didn't watch the dub version, because the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, man, I really do like this movie. The dubbing was killing me.
The
But it was very, I mean, maybe I'm probably going to insult people saying, but it was very like anime voice, like anime American voice style. Like the little girl's like, no, mommy, no, I don't want to do it. No. Like, oh, come on.
No, I mean, for a child actress, like I watched the subtitle version, right? So for a child actress, I thought she was pretty good. And apparently this was her first movie. Like, and I thought she like, when she was quiet, you could tell that she was angry, and then she finally, they have like this big blow up scene, and the way she conveyed it, I thought was really solid. It was really good.
There you go.
Okay, cool. Any last thoughts before we get to ratings?
Yes. Where did that bed sheet come from? Was that like introduced in the movie, and I just don't remember?
No, I didn't. I didn't see any. I think it just it was just something the djinn used to, I don't know, haunt people with. I don't know, because eventually, like, it definitely showed that it can, like, I think it's the culture thing. It like, you know how they had to wear, you know,
I'm not
they had
gonna
to wear
one.
Covers.
Yeah.
They had to cover themselves, cover their hair, cover right. their body.
That makes sense. Okay.
They only expose part of their face. And I think it was looking like one of those people, which even adds another layer to it, right? Because this is something the woman didn't want, right? She didn't want that culture, and it's like attacking and haunting her. So that's another little like,
because it was a very
subtext of it,
non-threatening sheet, which I really liked about it too. It was like, you know, like white with like some sort of pattern on it.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. It was very, just no face, right? It's just like this dark, you know, where a face should be. It's just like nothing there.
Yeah.
It's
like, it just looked like a floating sheet almost. Yeah. It was like,
Cool. Oh, that's cool. All right. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you're doing.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
For Johnny's sexy spooky bones for Under the Shadow, after discussing this movie in great detail, I am going to give it 6 sexy spooky bones.
Nice. You need to watch the subtitle version. Go back and watch the subtitle version. you might get different things from it. I'm going to give it 9 sexy spooky bones out of 10.
That gives,
I really like this movie,
Under the Shadow, 69 sexy spooky bones.
that's the sexiest of sexiest and the most pleasing rating we've ever given a movie.
Mutually pleasing. Oh.
Mutually pleasing. Your top or bottom, I don't know.
I'll leave that for the mystery of the Skeleton Boys.
That's what's under the shadow. All right, guys and gals and non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky.
Skeleton crew, it's time the boys say goodbye. Love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to.